presiding, is now in session.
You may be seated. Thank you. Good morning. On behalf of the South Dakota Supreme Court, first of all, I want to thank Northern State University for hosting us for our March term of court. We have 3 days here, and this is our second day of oral arguments. We're grateful for those of you in the audience that have been able to or able to attend today. We have several high schools that are in attendance: Aberdeen Central High School, Groton area, Henry, Ipswich, Jamestown, Sanborn Central, Summit, Wabe, and Wilmot. So welcome to all of you this morning. We have four cases set for oral argument today. The first case is entitled State of South Dakota versus Brandon Hahn. Kyle Bocamp is present and will argue on behalf of the defendant appellant, Mr. Hahn. And Jennifer Jorgensen is present and will be arguing on behalf of the state of South Dakota. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and then Mr. Bocamp, you'll have a 5-minute rebuttal. With that, Mr. Bocamp, you may proceed with your initial argument.
Counsel, Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the court. As the Chief Justice just mentioned, my name is Kyle Bocamp. I'm here on behalf of Brandon Hahn. The primary, the sole issue on appeal is whether the circuit court erred when it denied defense counsel's motion for a judgment of acquittal where the fair market value of the damaged property was not established. This did go to a jury trial in the summer of 2023, in which the state provided testimony that was primarily uncontested that the homeowner of a place in Rapid City, in the middle of the night, awoke to the sound of pounding and hollering at her front door. The homeowner did describe that the noise that woke her up was incredible. It was a lot of pounding. It was a metal door, so there was not a lot of the door that broke, but a lot of the pieces around it shattered. And that's the scene that law enforcement arrived to. They described that there were like these little plaques on the front door, and some of them were broken off. The door frame itself was busted into little parts. Further testified that if you open the door and look inside that house, there are wood pieces, parts of the frame, all around. Brandon Hahn was indicted on one count of intentional damage to private property in the first degree. For the state to have proven that, they must have shown that any person who, with specific intent to do so, injures, damages, or destroys private property in which any other person has an interest without the consent of that other person. As I said, this was a 2-day trial. The state's theory from the outset was that the intentional damage to private property pertained solely to the damage done to the door and the efforts made to repair it with the hope that homeowner would feel safe in her home again. The state went on to say that witnesses will testify that the door cost more than $1,000 to repair. The homeowner on the stand testified that the house that she resided in was built in 1962, and that was the original door, that was the original frame from that time when she moved in. Homeowner's daughter testified that there were a lot of different things that they did to ensure that this house was reinforced, to ensure that homeowner could feel safe in that house once again. And as the brief indicates, I want to make clear, there's no question that anybody who goes through something like this would want to reinforce, would want to ensure that their house was going to be safe, so if anything like this did happen again, that they wouldn't have to feel as endangered as homeowner did on that night. But specifically, homeowner's daughter testified that she paid for a special locking mechanism that was built and labor that was put in by a carpenter for the installation.
Was the reasonableness of the repair costs, whether it's the lock or any of the other parts, ever challenged? In other words, was there an argument that you know, hey, this is too much. This is a Cadillac lock, and you know, there was a Chevrolet lock before, and so this isn't reasonable. This is an upgrade, and it's not right. I didn't see that argument, but maybe I'm missing it.
And Justice Salter, as the court's well aware, I'm left with the record that I have.
Understood, of course.
Yes, I don't believe that there was a whole lot of cross-examination put on defense as to the reasonableness of the efforts put by the homeowner.
Was there an argument in front of the jury? In the argument I saw related to the argument you're making and the one in the brief, which is to say essentially before, in a sequence, you have to prove market value before you can look to repair costs, and it's only when the repair costs don't eclipse the market value that you can even do that. But we need this baseline market value. Am I right with your argument?
Correct. And my brief does indicate that as well as it goes to the jury instructions.
But there's not a challenge necessarily to the reasonableness of the $1,300 or the $1,400 or whatever the two numbers were. Am I right? And I'm saying that, but I don't know. I'm question mark on the end. Is that right?
Yes. And I, once again, if we had the ability to go back, I think that's something that defense counsel probably would have pushed a little bit more on at trial, the reasonableness of those repairs that were conducted. I would note that I think defense counsel had their mind made up that the fair market value could not be established, so therefore they felt they didn't need to go any further to show what would be reasonable. And I think that's really what the argument is for pattern jury instruction 325.5, in which it does speak to what is reasonable in that regard, what the repairs would be. But as my brief argues as well, I think there needs to be at least an established fair market value before you can go to that next step of what would be reasonable and what would not be reasonable.
But even on appeal, you're not arguing that next step of the reasonableness of the repair costs on appeal.
Chief Justice, I'm not. I think it's solely based on the fact that fair market value was never established. And that's primarily why State v. Rich is relied on so heavily in the brief. That case is analogous, and I would argue that the facts we have here are even more troublesome than what we saw in Rich, because as this court wrote in State v. Rich, very easily could have been proven that the fair market value could have been established had they asked, I believe it was the property manager, as to what the value was. We don't have that here, and we have a door from 1962. I don't believe that there's really any way that homeowner or any of the witnesses that testified at trial could establish that the fair market value was over that threshold of $1,000.
Let me ask you about how you read Rich. How do you read Rich? Is it an effort to isolate the value of the property? Seems like that's true. But if so, what property? The house that was sort of the overarching abstracted piece of property that contained these windows and doors that were damaged in Rich, or is it the doors and the windows themselves that was the property? It almost seemed like it was the house. How do you read that?
And Justice Salter, State v. Rich does stand for the proposition that property must be returned to the value at which it was prior to the damage that occurred. That's also the jury instruction 325.4 that the jury was instructed on, that you must consider what the value would be when the property is restored to substantially the same condition. So as it may be the house that was fully considered, that was concerning to homeowner, it's all about the door, the frame, to place it back into the substantially same condition that it would have been prior to this happening.
Is that a market value determination? Is there a secondary commercial market or a principal new market for door frames that even exists?
And that's truly where I believe the state had to make the argument that it did at trial, that it was relying on State v. Ledoux, and that they could look at just the reasonable repairs that were put into the locking mechanism, the frame, and the door, and that's solely because they really didn't have anybody who could testify to that. Now, that's a problem for the state, but that shouldn't translate to a conviction where it cannot be proven or it cannot be shown. state has resources. There could have been many other options. They could have at least inquired with homeowner if they hadn't already. They could have gone back. They could have inquired as to what the value of that house was at the time. There's nothing here to suggest that fair market value was ever established.
The circuit, go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
Counsel, so the intentional damage to property statute reads a little bit differently now than it did at the time of Rich. And in Rich, it referred to the value of the property exceeding a certain sum. Now it refers to the damage to the property is of a certain amount. Do you find that difference significant in how you interpret what needed to be shown here?
Justice, I don't. In part because, as the brief mentions as well, State v. Rich is still mentioned in the comments to the pattern jury instruction that we have. Also, this court did have the opportunity in State v. Ledoux to either distinguish or overturn State v. Rich in its entirety. This court chose not to do that, saying that the facts in State v. Ledoux were distinguishable. So for that reason, I would say that State v. Rich is still good law, especially or even with the consideration of a rewriting of the statutes.
Counsel, for the benefit of the audience, under 2234-1, why does it matter what the cost of the door is?
Well, as this court did rationalize in State v. Rich, it's, and I want to make sure that I quote this correctly, is that this court held that testifying to the amount of repairs was not the proper method of proving value in the case. When a criminal statute provides for a greater penalty, such as we have here, which is a felony offense, when the damage is over a greater sum, value means the market value. So to your question, Justice Kern, I would say that it's important that the fair market value be established because we are looking at taking away somebody's due process, which is what happened here without the fair market value having been established.
It affects what classification of crime it is, the felony based on the cost of repair.
Correct, Justice Kern.
And so if it's under $1,000, it's a misdemeanor.
Yes.
If it's over, and that's what the jury concluded, and we're here to determine whether that was the right test or not, but if it's over, it's a Class 6 felony.
Correct.
Big swing in terms of the relative severity of the offense. Perhaps.
Yes, and I should have led with that, and I do apologize. I would also note that that was another big distinguishing fact between State v. Rich and State v. Ledoux, in which it was a Class 2 misdemeanor in State v. Ledoux, which, I mean, local jail time, and it's a small fine. The state didn't have a burden of proving anything other than damage was, or property was damaged. It was under $400. Now, here we have over $1,000, as we've mentioned, that does raise the stakes, that does raise basically the exposure that Mr. Hahn was facing, and he was sentenced subsequent to being found guilty of intentional destruction of property.
Is there anything in the text, and I understand you rely heavily upon State versus Rich, and maybe that's just what your argument is and what it'll be, and I understand that, but is there anything in the text of what we now have codified at 2234-1, which is different than the 3.1 statute, as Justice Devaney pointed out, that was at issue in Rich. But is there anything in this current textual formulation of this statute that punishes intentional damage to property, the dash one statute, if you will, that gives us some sort of textual clue or indication that, you know, we should really be looking at market value? Does the statute even say value?
And Justice Salter, in relying on the pattern jury instructions, I don't see that the word fair market value ever does appear. Once again, the cases that are cited by that jury instruction, State v. Rich, does still appear, which indicate that fair market value is still the way that it needs to be established. I would note that there was quite a bit of discussion at the trial, the judgment of acquittal, as to whether that the repairs themselves would be enough. State seemed to indicate that they didn't need to show what the fair market value was because of State v. Ledoux, as well as this insurance check that was provided to the homeowner. As the brief goes into much more detail, there was no testimony as to what that check itself was actually used for. In part, that was because of a deadline that the state failed to meet to use that as an exhibit at trial. But at the same time, I don't really know if it would have mattered if any witness could have testified that a breakdown of, let's say, $400 from that check was used for repairs to the door. The rest was for manual labor. We just don't have an answer to that. So
you're saying there's a failure of proof on even the repair costs?
Yes, Justice Alter.
Okay. I thought that the son-in-law, first of all, the daughter testified that she deposited a $300 check from the insurance company, which corresponded with the $1,000 deductible. Maybe the jury could put that together. And then there was a question, any value that, did you place any value on this, or is there any market value or something along those lines? And she said, no, just the value the insurance company put on it. And then the son-in-law testified, it seemed like, about all those things that you were listing off earlier, the new lock and all that. It seemed to total an amount over $1,000. Wouldn't that constitute, I mean, if we were putting aside the market value question, wouldn't that constitute evidence?
It is evidence that there was some sort of an understanding between homeowner and their insurance that there was damage to that house and it needed to be repaired. But once again, that's a complete different equation that the insurance company is probably basing that off of. It's not what South Dakota case law or our statute truly indicates as to what the calculation is going to be for a felony punishment. I do see that my time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jorgensen, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court,
counsel.
On August 24th, 2021, at 12:30 a.m., defendant Brandon Hahn kicked in 85-year-old Dolores Mullen's front door. Defendant repeatedly kicked the door as pieces of the door broke off. Despite the door being deadbolted shut, the frame eventually broke apart, scattering pieces of the frame across the home. Defendant fled the scene, but was eventually apprehended. Defendant raises a narrow issue on appeal, whether there was sufficient evidence at trial to establish the value of the damaged doorway to sustain his conviction for intentional damage to property. Sufficient evidence established that the value of the damaged doorway exceeded $1,000 to support the jury's verdict, so the state respectfully requests that this court affirm his conviction. So this court reviews de novo denials for motions for judgment of acquittal and questions regarding the sufficiency of the evidence. This court's task is to determine whether after viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, any rational trier of fact could have found the essential damage element beyond a reasonable doubt. If the evidence, including the circumstantial evidence and reasonable inferences drawn therefrom, supports a reasonable theory of guilt, a guilty verdict will not be set aside. So in this case, the jury sat through 2 days of 2 days of evidence and 11 witnesses. Six of those 11 witnesses testified about the doorway. The jury also considered six exhibits depicting the damage to the doorway. After considering the testimony and the exhibits, the jury was asked to determine whether the state proved the damage element. The circuit court instructed the jury that the state must prove that the damage to the property was at least $1,000, but less than $2,500. The circuit court also gave two other instructions. Instruction number 20 and 21, when read together, instructed the jury to determine the damages based on the reasonable repairs or the value that the property was in immediately prior to the damage, whichever was less. It's rational to conclude that the jury looked at both of these instructions and determined that it could find the defendant guilty because both of those values were determined to be over $1,000.
You know, arguably, I wonder if they needed instruction 21. I mean, at minimum, Mr. Bocamp says that there's no evidence of market value, and if he's right about that, then why would they even give Instruction 21? And if the state's argument is we don't have to prove that at all, we can just go with reasonable cost of repairs, then Instruction 20 would have covered that. It doesn't seem like 21 was really raised by the evidence. 21 is that argument. That's that instruction that says, hey, if the market value or if the cost of repairs exceed the market value, go with the market value. But here it doesn't seem like there really was evidence of market value. So was that instruction even implicated by the evidence at trial?
Yes, Your Honor. The state did prove market value at trial. So the jury heard evidence about the value of this doorway before it was broken. Dolores, the homeowner, testified that before the door was broken, it worked well and functioned as it should. Deborah Mudge, her daughter, testified that the information she had about what the doorway was worth before it was kicked in was the value the insurance company placed on it. She testified that there was a $1,000 deductible.
Well, she didn't say it exactly that way. I don't know, but you're right. I know the answer and question you're talking about. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so she testified that there was a $1,000 deductible, and then the insurance company issued a check for $384 for the damage. The jury was instructed that it can use its reason and common sense to draw conclusions common sense conclusions from the evidence, and a common sense conclusion based on Deborah's testimony is that the insurance company placed a $1,384 evaluation on the doorway at the time of the incident. There was also testimony from Robert that the value of the door before it was broken was what it cost to repair it, but he did then qualify that by saying that he didn't assess the actual value of the door at the time or on the day it was broken. So from that, the jury could infer that the market value was $1,384. And then the jury also heard evidence that the cost to repair the damage was $1,474 and that those costs were reasonable. The jury heard that to restore this doorway to working condition, the door needed to be replaced and the frame needed to be repaired. It heard extensive testimony about how the door was destroyed beyond repair. There was boot marks all over this door. The decorative plaques on the door were busted off.
So under that theory, though, now as you switch to repair costs, it doesn't seem like there's any difference between the repair cost analysis and what you just described as the market cost estimate. It seems like they're the same thing.
No, Your Honor, that's not the state's position. The market value is the value of the door before it was broken. The repair cost is what it cost to restore the doorway to substantially the same condition that it was in before it was broken down.
Okay.
So the jury also heard that the trim was completely blown out around the doorway. And they also heard that the door was kicked in with such force that pieces of the front door frame were found in the back patio drapes. Dolores' son-in-law, Robert Mudge, provided sufficient testimony for the jury to conclude that these repairs were reasonable. Robert provided extensive testimony regarding the doorway. He stated that he initially thought that it would be cheaper to get a new door and frame from the lumberyard instead of trying to repair the damage. But when he contacted the lumberyard stated that it'd be very expensive and months before they had what was needed to restore or to get the new doorway. So instead, Robert worked with a carpenter to see what they could come up with. The carpenter was able to just cut out the bad parts of the door frame and repair it. And then the carpenter installed just a standard metal door from Menards because that was what was in stock. Robert testified that he also spent 2 days worth of time locating materials for the carpenter and assisting and fixing the doorway. And then to pay for these reasonable repairs, Dolores' daughter, Deborah, testified that she paid $300 to the carpenter, $599 for the new door, lock set, and other materials, and then $575 for the locking mechanism. So this total amount was $1,474 to repair the doorway. So these facts, viewed in light most favorable to the verdict, provide a rational theory of guilt. Ultimately, it was for the jury to determine the value of the damaged doorway. It had the opportunity to consider the evidence, weigh the credibility of the witnesses, and make the damages determination. It is the jury's responsibility to decide what conclusions should be drawn from the evidence. And to reverse defendant's conviction, the evidence must be so deficient that a rational trier of fact could not have found the essential damage element. That cannot be said on this record. If there's no further questions, the state would rely on its brief for any other arguments.
I have a question about Rich. You've heard the arguments about how, and seen the arguments, how the defense reads the Rich case. Do you have anything that you'd like to offer in terms of whether that's good law, bad law, impacted by subsequent changes to the statute, anything like that?
Yes, Your Honor. The statute has been changed since State v. Rich. In Rich, under the penalty provision, that focuses on the value of the property, and Rich seems to contemplate that if the property, the value of the building, is what should be considered to determine the penalty provision, versus now the statute seems to contemplate the damage to the property, not necessarily what the total value of the entire building was. So it is a little different.
Okay, thank you.
So if there's no other questions, the state would respectfully request that this court affirm defendant's conviction. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bocamp, you may proceed with your rebuttal.
I'd like to start where the state left off with Justice Salter's question. As I did mention in my initial argument, this court did have the opportunity to overturn State v. Rich in that Ledoux case. It distinguished it. I think that is important to consider as we...
In what way did they distinguish it? Relating to the non-consent element, right?
Yes.
But not really on the valuation question.
Correct. And I guess the point that I'm making to that is State v. Rich is contemplated there if there were any concerns about what that case stood for, that a determination could have been made that that's not in line with the statutes that we have.
But you mentioned earlier that Ledoux is a case about less than $400 worth of damages, and the court didn't need to address the higher amount of damages. And so maybe that's why we didn't do anything about Rich when we addressed Ledoux.
And that's wholly possible. Just to the question that was posed of, is it still good case law based off of the changing in statutes? That's the reason that I mentioned that it had the opportunity to do so, and nothing was done to that.
But we only typically in our cases, we only address the issues that we have to address in order to resolve the case. And in Ledoux, we didn't have to address that particular issue because, as you mentioned earlier, all the state needed to prove in Ledoux is that there was some damage, which they did. We didn't have to go into a determination of whether it was over 400 or over 1,000. Some damage was enough.
And I unfortunately wish I had a better answer for that, but I mean, State v. Rich is also a case that I think was from the 1970s, and so if there's been no overturning, overruling of it, that would just be my argument as to why it would still mesh with the statutes that we have since they've been changed.
Counsel, with regard,
go ahead, please.
If we were to conclude that the jury did need to know what the market value of the door was at the time it was damaged, I'd like to hear your response to counsel for the state's suggestion that came into the record through the testimony of the daughter as to the insurance payment. Did that come in without objection? What is your thought on that?
So there was quite a bit of discussion back and forth about the insurance check that daughter was provided. As I mentioned, there was a whole lot of it that was left out because of a missed deadline for the state to provide that to defense. State was still able to discuss the fact that she was given that check. But the testimony, the evidence that was provided to the jury really had no breakdown as to what part of that was meant to replace the damaged property, what went to manual labor, anything like that. So while the check did come in through that testimony, I believe that the effect that it should have had should have been minimal.
But right, wrong, or otherwise, I think the argument, as I understand it, is that, it was a cross-examination question by defense counsel, not you. And I'm not critical. I'm just saying it was someone else, and they asked the question something along the lines of, "Do you have any information or evidence or whatever opinion or something material about the market value?" I think, and I'm pulling it up right here, but I think that was the question. And if the response was no, just what the other than the you know what the insurance company valued it at. Maybe that's right or that's wrong, and maybe she thought it was repair or not, I don't know, but that was the question, I think, that elicited the answer. I think that's what the state's saying. Do you recall that testimony?
I do. I believe that was with homeowner, and it was along the questioning in cross-examination as to how long she had lived in the house and if everything was original. And I do believe that the question was posed to her as to, can you testify as to what the fair market value of that was? And I don't recall that she had any sort of guess or any estimate as to what that would be.
Except to say, other than the $1,384 the insurance company gave me.
Except for the check that was provided, correct.
Except for what the insurance, yeah.
And as my time is winding down, I would also state that I believe it is important for State v. Rich to continue to be the controlling authority, that fair market value must be established for no other reason than for a policy standpoint. I think really opening the doors for the state to provide evidence that repairs and replacements could open the door to a lot more convictions, a lot more felonies. For that reason, I would ask that this court reverse Mr. Hahn's conviction and remand it back to the circuit court. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.